Good evening. We're having a special class on a Jewish wedding. When a Chatan and Kala have decided to get married, so they set a wedding date. And then we come to the day of the wedding. The custom is that the Chatan and Kala do not meet for 7 days prior to the wedding. At the wedding, we have an Orthodox rabbi officiating the wedding called the Mesader Kiddushin, and he is responsible for the wedding going forth in correct halachic manner. There are two stages to the wedding, technically. There is Kiddushin and Nisuin. Those two stages in ancient time would be a year apart. Today we do them both at the wedding. What we call engagement is really an agreement that we will get married, but it's not a real engagement. The real engagement happens at the wedding. So, technically a wedding is the Chatan and the Kala come and the Chatan tells the Kala, I want to marry you. She says, great. He takes out a ring and says, in front of two kosher witnesses, behold, you are sanctified to me with this ring in order, in the manner of that Moshe instituted and the Jewish people have taken upon themselves as the custom of the Jewish people. And when two witnesses watch him give her that ring, so then we have Kiddushin. She is biblically his wife. She is an Eshet Ish. And then he takes her into his room, which can either be the chuppah, the canopy they're standing under, and that's Nisuin, or the Cheder Yichud, or the home they go to that night. So those are the two stages. We have a bunch of blessings. Okay, so now let's see what practically happens at a wedding. But what we're really doing is, halachically, we're doing two stages. Number one is the biblical engagement, the first step of marriage, Kiddushin, after which she becomes a married woman, and that is when he gives her the ring. And then the second stage, which happens basically under the chuppah, right afterwards, or when he takes her into a cheder yichud, according to Ashkenazim. But either way, we have a chuppah. So that's nisuin. That's in a nutshell a Jewish wedding. We have blessings, we have other things, we have a ksuba. We'll discuss all of that in a minute. Yes?
So is the talit also considered a chuppah?
Yeah, there are different opinions as to what the talit, as to what the chuppah is. So one opinion says it's her head covering that he pulls down over her. Another opinion says it's the chuppah we stand under, and that's the generally accepted opinion. A third opinion says it's the talit that he spreads over her. A fourth opinion says it's the room they go into afterwards to eat alone, even though that room technically, in ancient times, it wasn't locked. People would come in and out, but they had their private room. Today we lock it, so it's even more of a cheder yichud. Another opinion says it's when they go home. That's the chuppah. So we have different opinions as to what the chuppah is. We do all of them. Okay, coming back to what happens at a wedding. So we show up to the wedding, the kala is with her friends, the chatan is with his friends, the kala is the kala's chair. They have all these different prayers that a kala could say, very nice. If the chatan has not yet davened mincha, he should. On the mincha of his wedding day, the chatan has a special vidui that he says. It's like the mincha of Erev Yom Kippur. The Ashkenazim have the custom that they fast on the wedding day. Many Sephardim do not fast on their wedding day. There are many reasons that all chatanim wouldn't fast on their wedding day. If it falls out on Rosh Chodesh, other than Rosh Chodesh Nisan, if it falls out on Chanukah, so we don't fast if it's a holiday at the time of the wedding. Even if you're not fasting, you have to make sure not to drink intoxicating beverages. You have to be with it. You're about to cut a deal, right? You're getting married. So no intoxicating beverages before the wedding. So the chatan and the kala show up at the wedding hall, and then the rabbi comes, and very often the chatan's friends are going to sing next to him, and the chatan very often fills out the ksuba in advance. We're not going to close the deal, but he fills out the ksuba in advance. Now, the ksuba is the document which, in marriage, the husband is saying, I am obligating myself to take care of you. I'm obligating myself to live with you the way husband and wives normally live. And in the event of, God forbid, a divorce, I'm obligating myself to a certain sum of money. And the chatan also writes in the ksuba, the kala brought into the marriage X value. Now, in some ksubos and chutzarts, it's very accepted that these values are automatically written. You don't even get a choice. In Israel, it's very accepted that you fill in these numbers. So you have to know what numbers you're filling in. Basically, there's this major number, which is, this is what I'm obligating myself to in the ksuba. It encompasses everything. What she brought into the marriage, and what I'm obligating myself, everything together, the sum total is. So that sum total has to be a realistic number, a number that's in the range of what you can afford. If a guy is earning a salary of 80,000 shekel a year, and he writes down 8 million shekel, that's not so realistic, you know. He needs to work 100 years to make that, assuming he has zero expenses, right? So that's not a realistic number. You have to write a number that's realistic. Usually we say somewhere around 2-year salary, 3-year salary, saying that's a realistic number, somewhere around there. So if a person's making whatever, you could write a bigger number if you have investments, if you have properties, if you have an inheritance. If it's realistic to write a bigger number, you could write whatever you want. Just remember that the Kala side is paying attention to what you're writing, even though in Sephardi weddings, we don't read that out loud. That remains private. They skip that part in the reading of the Ksuba. Okay, so we prepared, we fill in the Ksuba. Now, the rabbi will give the Chatan a cloth or his pen, something, and that's an act of acquisition. We do this in front of witnesses. When the Chatan accepts that, he lifts it, and he's saying, I'm taking this, and with it, I am taking upon myself all the responsibility to do all that it says in the Ksuba, all the monetary responsibility. That's an act of kinyan. Some have the custom that on top of that, they seal off the Ksuba with a handshake, what's called in halacha tekiat kaf, shaking the hands. It's another way of showing that I am obligating myself to this deal, the deal of the Ksuba. And in some Ksubas it even says that we signed on this contract and we agreed not only with an act of acquisition, what's called in Hebrew a kinyan, but also we did a tikiyat kaf. We shook our hands over it. Fine. Then the chatan goes to the kala. We dance with the chatan here in Israel to the kala, to what's called the badekin. The chatan will come to the kala who, if she's, this is her first wedding, so then she's wearing, her hair is uncovered, and the chatan pulls down the veil over her head. Ordinarily, he'll say a few nice words to her. There is a custom that at that point, the chatan's parents give him a blessing, and the kala's parents give her a blessing. This custom is ancient, based on Rebecca, Rivka, getting a blessing when she went off to marry Yitzchak. They blessed her achotin ota'ila alfei revava. The Sfardim have a custom that when a chatan gets an aliyah la-Torah, when he gets called up to the Torah, the Shabbos before the wedding, so they read for him that whole story, that whole section of the Torah, of how Rivka was sent off, and her family blessed her when she went off to get married, so they read that in honor of the chatan. Some Sfardim have that custom, but our remnant of that, at least for Ashkenazim, is that the parents bless the children right by the badekin. In ancient times, the rabbis used to bless the kala who was going off to the wedding. The badekin, the chasn, wouldn't even show up. The kala would have the veil pulled down over her, and then, or she would pull it down over her, I don't know, maybe her mother or father helped her pull it down, and then the elders of the city would come to her and bless her that she should have a successful marriage. So it's a very special moment when the parents can bless their kids. From there they're going to go to the chuppah. So the chatan goes, and the way we do it here in Israel is we dance with the chatan to the chuppah. In chutzlarts they have this whole procession. They walk down the aisle to music, whatever. It doesn't really matter. And then the kala comes to the chuppah. It says in the medrash, on the pasuk, v'hu kechatan yotze mechuppato. The pasuk we say at every Shabbos describes that the sun going across the sky is like the chatan coming across to greet his kala. And based on that, a chatan should really take a few steps out of the chuppah to greet his kala when she comes. There are different customs, whether he takes 3 steps, whether he goes down the steps, whether he goes further to greet the kala. Different customs. Make sure you know what your custom is, because otherwise you look weird. Meaning, at my wedding, I wanted to step out of the chuppah, and the rabbi said, "What are you doing?" And I didn't want to argue with him. He's the officiating rabbi, but I was doing what our custom is. Our custom is that you walk forth out of the chuppah at least 3 steps to greet the kala. The rabbi who officiated our wedding was Rav Avraham Shapiro. He knew what he was talking about, but he was running the wedding based on the Jerusalem custom. So I guess the Jerusalem custom doesn't include that. And then the kala comes into the chuppah. Ashkenazi custom is that she goes around the chatan 7 times. Sephardim don't do that. The kala stands to the right of the chatan, as the pasuk says, "Nitzva shegali mincha." The wife stands to your right side. So the kala stands to the right, and then her mother, and then different customs as to whether it's her mother, then your mother, and then on your side stands your father, and then her father. Other people have it, the couple, her mother, and then her father, and then you have your father and then your mother. Different ways of dividing it up there. There are different customs as to where the Chatan and Kala should face, whether they should face the east or face Jerusalem. None of this is critical. It's a kosher wedding regardless. And the rabbi is responsible for it, not you, so don't worry about it. Some say the congregation faces Jerusalem and you face the congregation. Others say you face Jerusalem and the congregation should face your back. Others say no, the congregation should face you and you should face Jerusalem. I'm saying there are customs all directions, right? Which way? Do we all face Jerusalem? I was once at a wedding where they did that. The Chasan and Kala had their back to the crowd. They were facing Jerusalem and the crowd was facing Jerusalem. But most of the time we don't do that. The Chasan and Kala are facing the crowd is facing the Chasan and Kala, and one of them is facing Jerusalem. Most of the time it's the Chatan and Kala, sometimes it's the crowd, different customs on that. Okay, now the first thing we're going to do is the mitzvah of engagement. So you're going to take a ring that belongs to you, and the two witnesses will be called up and will be asked, is this ring worth a pruta? Is it worth a few cents? And they'll say, yes, it is. Now this is so that the Kala cannot later on claim, I thought it was worth $2 million. It's only worth 1.9. That's not fair. I did not mean to engage to you for a ring worth 1.9 million. So in order to avoid those problems, we make her hear, hey, is this worth a few cents? Yes, okay. In other words, you're getting married to him with understanding. It's a ring worth a few cents. You can't later on say, I thought it was worth something else. And that's why the Kala keeps her veil down. Our custom is that she keeps it down during the wedding procession so that she can't later on claim, I thought I saw it worth this much. You didn't see it well. You had a veil over your eyes. How well could you have seen it? And that's why our custom is that we... We don't put engravings in the ring. Some people do. But the ancient custom was that we don't, because this way the Kala can't say, I thought with such intricate engravings it had a value of such and such, and now I see it's only worth such and such. Today we're more lenient on that, because today most of our gold is not affected by the engravings. Its value is based on weight and not on engravings. But at any rate, that's ancient custom, that it should be plain gold, without engravings, without a stone, plain gold, so that there's no room for misunderstandings. The Chatan is then asked by the rabbi, did you buy this of your own money? Because you're going to engage her with this. And the answer should be yes. Hopefully you bought it with your own money. And then the Kala extends this finger. You can tell your Kala in advance. Sometimes the mother tries to explain to the Kala. I've been at weddings where the Kala goes, I know. And no, she doesn't, because it's unnatural. No Kala wears a ring on this finger. But for the procession of putting on the ring, she puts out her pointer finger, and the Chatan says, before the Chatan does it, the rabbi makes a blessing over engaging her. He's going to make a blessing, Borei Pragafin, we're going to drink a little bit of wine, in honor of the event, and then he's going to make a blessing over the act of engagement. That's your blessing, man. He's making it for you. So that means you have to pay attention and say amen. You cannot be joking with your Kala while the rabbi is making your blessing. The only reason the rabbi is making it is so as not to embarrass those Kala Chatanim who don't know the blessing, don't know how to read. They're illiterate Chatanim, so for the last millennium or two, we've had the custom that the rabbi makes it for the Chatan, so as not to embarrass those who wouldn't know how to read it off a piece of paper. So the rabbi makes it on your behalf. The blessing of Borei Pri Hagafen is for you and the Kala. I made sure at my wedding to tell my wife, this is for us. We're both going to drink the cup of wine based on the rabbi's blessing. So you have to pay attention and answer amen. He's going to make a Borei Pri Hagafen. Some have the custom that the rabbi drinks first and then he gives you and then the Kala. The Kala's mother will give her to drink from the cup of wine, the first cup. The second cup, some have the custom that the Kala's mother gives her, and some have the custom that the Chatan gives her. There are different customs as to who gives her the second cup to drink. But the first cup is over the mitzvah of Kiddushin. The rabbi will make a Borei Pri Hagafen, and then he will make a blessing over the mitzvah of Kiddushin. Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvah Tzivanu Al Arayot. You could look it up in an art scroll. We're moving forward. After that, we call up the witnesses. Is this ring worth a pruta? They say yes. You take the ring. She extends the finger. You say, Harat Mekudeshet Li, and then you put the ring on her finger. As far as the custom is, everyone says Mekudeshet. We testify she is Mekudeshet. Technically, we designate two witnesses, but halachically, it's not only those two. There are other witnesses that can be counted on. But sure, you say. What do you mean?
You say another Mekudeshet, you're saying?
The onlookers make a declaration after you put it on her finger. Mekudeshet, Mekudeshet, Mekudeshet. she has hereby been engaged. That's the declaration. She shouldn't try to take it off, because halachically, one of the ways a woman could show, I don't want to marry him, I changed my mind, is if after he puts the ring on her finger, she tosses it off. No, I don't. Meaning, tossing it off is a way of saying, no, I don't. So that's why we tell the kala, don't take it off just yet. Wait. Later on, you'll want to switch fingers, you'll switch fingers. Right after the engagement, leave it on that finger. Because in the event that she really means to switch fingers, but as she's taking it off, it slips off her finger, so then technically we all just witnessed how you tried to engage her, and she took it off. Now, how do you know what her intention was? So then, at weddings where that would happen, where the kala would take it off and it would slip and fall on the ground, in order to ensure there were no room for questions, you would have to redo the whole procession. Take back the ring and tell her and put it on her finger, right? So that's why we tell the kala, leave it on, you'll switch fingers later. After we did kiddushin, technically we're going to do the reading of the ksuba, the handing of the ksuba, the nisuin of, which is basically standing under the canopy. You're under the canopy already. So it's a little funny, after we blessed on one cup of wine to bless on another one, so we make a break. What's the break? We ask the rabbi, could you come read the ksuba, what was just read here? So the whole point of reading the ksuba is just to make a break between the two blessings on the cup of wine. So rabbi is honored, he comes up, he reads the ksuba, and then very often at that moment the witnesses will sign, if they didn't sign earlier, and very often at that moment the rabbi will give you a handkerchief or a pen to do the act of acquisition and the handshake. That's these are acts of showing that you're accepting the responsibility of the ksuba, it's a done deal. And then you give her the ksuba, and we have the Sheva Brachos, seven blessings over the beauty of the fact that you are marrying her. And Sheva Brachos is the conclusion of Nisuin. By doing Sheva Brachos, you're saying, we are hereby taking this as our chuppah, this is our Nisuin. We're concluding the marriage ceremony. It's not only Kiddushin, this is our Nisuin as well. Those seven blessings are what really, then we continue making those seven blessings for the next 7 days, right? 7 days including the first. But in a nutshell, that's the wedding ceremony. Ashkenazim will then go back and bring the kala to Cheder Yichud. Sfaradim do not. Sfaradim sometimes have a private meal, but not completely in seclusion in a Cheder Yichud. At some point during the ceremony, we break a cup so that we show that even though we're happy here, Jerusalem is destroyed, our happiness is not complete. Our custom is also that a chatan, before he goes to the wedding, takes ash and puts it on his forehead where he would wear tefillin. That's a pasuk, that's a gemara, that's a shulchan aruch. That's what you should do. Even though today many people let go of that custom, and I don't know why, they shouldn't. Usually before going down to the chuppah, you put some ash on your forehead where you would ordinarily put tefillin. And what we're saying is, some people do it at the chuppah itself. What we're saying, the pasuk says that ever since the destruction of Jerusalem, instead of our glory, we have ash. And that's part of what we're showing. We're not, things aren't complete. We do not yet have a Beit HaMikdash. So that's, in a nutshell, the wedding ceremony, and then we have the dancing and the happiness of the wedding, but that's what's happening under the chuppah. What's important is, we will make a second blessing of Bori Pri HaGafen there, right? The second blessing of Bori Pri HaGafen, again, you and the kala will bring from it. Again, you should have in mind, it's your blessing. When the rabbi made the blessing over the engagement, Asher Kiddushan Stav Tzivanu Ala Arayot, that's your blessing, you're the one engaging her. He's making it for you, you have to listen and say Amen. And the Sheva Brachos are really blessings that the congregation is wishing you. Whoever's making the blessings, representing the congregation and wishing you these blessings. That's why it's a little bit foolish for a Chatan to make his own Sheva Brachos. There are times that there's no one else who knows how. But under normal circumstances, it's wishes that the congregation's wishing you. They should be the one, someone, one of them should be making the blessings. Yes, Yonatan.
Sir, this is just out of mere curiosity, but the ash, how much would normally be put?
We don't put a lot.
Not a lot.
And we don't put it on the forehead, we put it where the hair is.
Right.
So it brushes off pretty easy. You don't walk around with this black stain the whole wedding.
Okay.